Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2009 and Ruination, the early years.
You know, if you flip through a modern digital photo album today, there's this invisible, universally understood contract at play.
Right, like a highlight reel.
Exactly. We all know we are looking at a carefully engineered highlight reel. I mean, the sunset over the ocean is color corrected. The group smiling with their drinks took like 14 takes to get the angle right.
Oh, yeah. The whole production is just designed to project this flawless, relaxing reality.
Yeah. We've culturally agreed to just completely crop out the messy parts of the human experience.
Which creates a really fascinating sociological baseline. I mean, we expect curation, you know? We demand this glossy, aspirational aesthetic from anyone broadcasting their life.
But when you step back to the world of early internet audio journals, that expectation just shatters completely.
Totally. You enter this digital landscape that is proudly and often defiantly unvarnished. It's an era where the mess isn't hidden. The mess is the actual product.
I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
Welcome to Ruination, the early years. Today, we're taking you on a deep dive into the archives of the Big Fatty Online podcast.
Or the BFO.
Right, the BFO.
Yeah.
And we're specifically focusing on the life, the stories, and the unbridled chaos of March 2009.
And what we are really tracking here is the evolution of digital authenticity.
Yeah, because we're looking at a creator who is attempting to navigate the high-end luxury of a maritime vacation while remaining, you know, deeply tethered to the incredibly mundane, irritating friction of everyday life.
It is such a study in contrasts. You have this intersection of aspirational living and unfiltered reality, and it honestly provides a perfect blueprint for the parasocial relationships that dominate the internet today.
So, okay, let's unpack this. I want to start by looking at his mental state before any of this travel even begins.
Oh boy.
Yeah. It's early March, and Big Fatty is supposed to be in packing mode for this highly anticipated Atlantis gay cruise, but his brain operates like a web browser with about 50 different tabs open.
And none of them are focused on luggage.
Not a single one. Instead, he is entirely consumed by this influx of eccentric listener mail. Like, he receives an anonymous package containing a brand new HD flip video camera.
Which, by the way, is a remarkable artifact of 2009 technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the concept of high-definition video was just starting to penetrate the consumer market.
Right. And he's shocked by the gift, but he openly admits on the air that he has absolutely no idea how to shoot or edit in HD.
Yeah, it's a tool for a medium he just hasn't mastered yet.
But the mail keeps coming. He gets a package from a listener named Nancy in Japan, and it contains a pair of Japanese toe socks.
Oh, the ones with individual slots for every single toe.
Yes, yeah. Like a glove for your foot. And he spends a significant amount of airtime stressing out over the logistics of these socks.
Wow.
He tells the audience he's worried it'll take the rest of his natural life to fit his toes into these things, particularly because he's dealing with what he vividly describes as his gouty toe.
Oh my gosh, but wait. The detail that truly matters to him is that Nancy bought these socks at a discount outlet, right?
Exactly. A discount is like a foundational pillar of the BFO value system. It doesn't matter if the item is shipped internationally from Japan. If it was acquired on clearance, the inherent value of the gift just skyrockets.
It really does.
He also gets this postcard from Miss Wes, sent from Disneyland, featuring the pirates from the Caribbean ride. But the sender affectionately dubbed them the Butt Pirates.
Naturally.
Right. It's this constant stream of highly specific inside joke material. And then the ultimate distraction derails his packing completely.
Oh, the commercial.
Yes. He gets a television commercial stuck in his head. But it's not a contemporary ad. It is a scratchy, synthesized United States Census commercial from the year 1980.
From nearly 30 years prior to the recording date.
Yeah, and he plays the actual audio on the podcast, this booming chorus singing, "We're counting on you." And he just sings right along with it.
That is so specific.
I know. He uses this decades-old jingle as a public service announcement to warn you, the listener, that 2010 is fast approaching and will be another census year.
And while he is singing government jingles, he is simultaneously scouring the internet for a men's caftan.
Oh, yeah. He's been inspired by his podcasting rival, Auntie Vera, the sea hag.
Right.
And he informs the audience that his ultimate goal is to simply live his life as a grand dame in a caftan.
You know, what's fascinating here is when you look at the sheer volume of these tangential distractions, it highlights something fundamental about early podcasting.
So?
Well, in 2009, this medium was still deeply niche. A host couldn't just look at a digital analytics dashboard and see thousands of anonymous passive views.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah. So receiving a physical flip camera, a pair of toe socks from an outlet mall in Japan, or a postcard from a theme park, these tangible items were the physical anchors of his digital community.
They provided concrete proof that his voice was echoing across the globe.
Exactly.
You know, I look at these mundane mail unboxings and I get the sense that he shares them with such intense, breathless enthusiasm because it's a grounding mechanism.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, he is about to embark on this luxurious, exclusive vacation. And perhaps focusing on a gout-friendly toe sock is a subconscious way of keeping his feet literally and figuratively firmly planted in the reality of his audience before he unplugs.
It acts as an equalizer.
Yeah.
He is validating the connection with the listeners through shared, tangible objects before he temporarily ascends to a lifestyle that most of them can't currently access.
Absolutely. And that transition from his basement studio, the Fat Cave, to the luxury of the cruise ship in Fort Lauderdale is where that grounding mechanism goes into overdrive.
Because the travel process is nothing short of disastrous.
Disastrous is putting it mildly. He is traveling with his core crew, Miss Kitty, Miss Porter, and Granny. And the friction begins immediately.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Granny comes down with a severe case of gastrointestinal distress that the group affectionately dubs Applebee's Revenge.
Oh, wow.
She contracted it after eating lunch at the chain restaurant the day prior to their flight.
I mean, it is the ultimate nightmare scenario for air travel, yet it is presented to the audience with total transparency.
Right. And then they land in Florida, and the friction just compounds at the rental car counter. Miss Kitty agrees to what the agent pitches as a simple $10 upgrade for a Toyota RAV4, just so they can physically fit all their luggage.
But of course, as anyone who has ever rented a car knows, the magic of local taxes and hidden fees inexplicably morphs that $10 upgrade into a $40 charge.
Yep. And this becomes a massive, highly debated point of contention among the group. Why do we care about a $40 rental car fee or a tomato on a salad?
Well, the $40 surcharge is a brilliant narrative device.
Exactly. Because if he only spoke about the high-end elements of the trip, he risks alienating his core demographic.
Right. The feeling of being nickel and dimed at a rental car counter is a universal grievance. It pulls the listener right into the passenger seat of that RAV4.
It totally does. Then they pull up to their accommodations. They check into a place called the Inn Leather Resort.
Oh, this is the best part.
Yeah. Now, this happens to be an aggressively clothing-optional establishment.
Oh, my gosh.
And Miss Porter is so deeply unsettled by the environment that every single time she leaves the hotel room, she just repeatedly mutters the word horrifying.
The comedic juxtaposition here is just staggering.
Right.
You have a group of travelers dealing with the crushing mundanity of a $40 rental fee and the lingering effects of an Applebee's stomach bug. And they are trying to navigate these deeply suburban problems while surrounded by a wild, clothing-optional leather resort.
I was thinking about this booking, and it feels almost intentional. I mean, why book a clothing-optional leather resort for a group that includes Granny and Miss Porter?
That's a good point.
It almost seems like early internet creators intuitively understood that perfect, frictionless travel makes for terrible audio.
That is a crucial insight. Friction is the engine of content.
Right.
A seamless check-in at a generic corporate hotel yields a 10-second anecdote. But checking into Inn Leather and documenting Miss Porter's ongoing existential dread, that provides a rich, multi-layered narrative that sustains the audience's attention for days.
And the friction even extends to their meals. They go to Lester's Diner, and Big Fatty is absolutely appalled when his burger arrives with surprise grilled onions.
Which is such a relatable annoyance.
Yeah. He also documents this hyper-specific regional quirk, noting that in South Florida, restaurants inexplicably put tomatoes on a Caesar salad.
Wait, really? That is weird.
Right. And the crowning moment of this pre-cruise chaos happens at the diner's cash register. A Jewish lady looks at Miss Porter's t-shirt, which bears the letters ECDNY, and she hilariously mistakes this entire eclectic crew for a group of rugged New York City firemen.
I love that. Every one of these details, the tomato on the salad, the grilled onions, the t-shirt misunderstanding, it all serves to shrink the distance between the broadcaster and the listener. It is the tactical deployment of relatability.
It really sets the stage perfectly for the actual embarkation because they survive the Fort Lauderdale chaos and finally board the Celebrity Solstice.
And the moment they step onto that ship, the vibe instantly shifts from terrestrial stress to pure, unadulterated maritime indulgence.
Oh, totally. The boarding process is a breeze. They locate Aqua Spa Class Cabin 1509, which is positioned way up on the 11th floor.
Nice.
They are immediately greeted with lemongrass foot spray and a complimentary bottle of elegantly named Le Coq Rouge wine.
Yet, even surrounded by this elevated luxury, his proudest moment is a triumph of discount economics.
Oh, yes. He brags to the audience that he utilized his liquor store savvy to purchase an export strength, 94.6 proof liter of Tanqueray gin from the ship's store.
For how much?
For a mere $16.95.
That is amazing.
He cannot let go of the bargain hunting, even in the Aqua Spa class. But here's where it gets really interesting. The interaction that defines this leg of the journey happens with the room's housekeeper, Consuela.
Oh, the towel puppet incident.
Yes. Big Fatty essentially demands that she construct a towel puppet for him. And when she delivers on this request, he doesn't just thank her.
No, of course not.
He takes a photograph of himself posing completely naked with this towel puppet, and he immediately posts it online.
It is an incredibly bold assertion of digital presence, especially for the 2009 internet landscape. He is merging the absurd domesticity of a cruise ship towel animal with an unfiltered, almost provocative exhibitionism.
And the events on the ship match that bold energy. There is a special mystery guest performer who is revealed before the ship even leaves the port.
Kimberly Locke.
Yes. Famous for taking third place on American Idol. She delivers this massive emotional performance that actually drives Granny and Miss Porter to tears during the standing ovation.
Wow.
But Big Fatty is quick to point out the brutal logistics of cruise entertainment. He notes that as soon as she finishes the set, she and her band are immediately pushed off the boat so the Solstice can actually set sail.
The sail away itself is painted as this highly cinematic communal event.
Right.
It is 10:30 at night, the ship is pulling out of Fort Lauderdale, and all along the waterfront condos, queens are standing out on their balconies.
It sounds so fun.
They are blowing air horns and flashing their lights in the darkness, and the ship's captain is responding by blasting the massive cruise horn right back at them. It's a moment of immense solidarity and celebration.
It sounds electric. And, of course, the culinary documentation continues with rigorous detail. They dine at the Tuscan Grill.
Oh, the food reviews.
Yeah, Miss Kitty orders the steak tartare, and her blunt review is simply that it tastes exactly like a pile of raw meat.
Which is an assessment that is technically accurate, even if it lacks culinary romance.
Exactly. And they're served an incredible French onion soup, but the group concludes that it strangely tastes exactly like turkey gravy mixed with chicken stock.
So specific.
Then Big Fatty experiences a tragedy of luxury when his filet mignon arrives cooked well done instead of his requested medium rare, forcing him to send it back.
A whore.
But the meal is ultimately redeemed by a dark chocolate fondue. Yet, in the midst of analyzing steak temperatures and fondue, Big Fatty makes a very deliberate choice to throw shade at Auntie Vera.
He proudly brags to his listeners that, unlike his rival the Sea Hag, he did not go down to the purser's desk and demand that his deck furniture be repainted.
Right. What you are seeing here is the utilization of luxury as a backdrop for ongoing narrative conflict. He isn't taking a vacation from the podcast, you know.
Exactly. The vacation is merely a new set for the podcast. He is harvesting premium, aspirational content, but he is painting it with the exact same relatable complaints. A ruined steak, a feud with a rival that fuel his daily life back home.
But the luxury narrative is violently interrupted when the ship docks in Labadee, Haiti.
Oh, the excursion.
Yeah, the group decides to go on a shore excursion, specifically a zipline adventure. Miss Kitty wisely opts out of the excursion, citing back problems.
A remarkably prescient decision on her part.
Incredibly so. Big Fatty, Granny, and Miss Porter take the zipline, but the engineering of the ride results in a violently abrupt stop at the bottom.
Oh, no.
The kinetic impact is so severe that it visually turns the world upside down on his recording, and he severely bruises his right elbow.
And this is where the sheer dedication to the medium becomes apparent.
Yeah.
Because his immediate reaction to physical trauma isn't to retreat into privacy. He ensures he captures the entire chaotic impact on his brand new flip camera, proudly promising the audience that he will upload the footage as the very first official BFO film strip.
Which brings us to a massive technological hurdle. I mean, think about the timeline here for a second. The year is 2009.
Right.
The iPhone 3G is relatively new. The concept of mobile broadband is in its infancy, and Big Fatty is attempting to upload large audio files for his podcast from the middle of the ocean, relying on a shared maritime satellite connection.
It was practically a mathematical impossibility.
Yeah, it is an excruciatingly slow process, and his frustration just boils over. He begins blaming the other passengers, complaining that all the queens on the ship have brought their new iPhones and computers.
And they're completely monopolizing the ship's limited bandwidth by browsing the hookup site Manhunt.
Yes. It is easy to forget the sheer friction of early content creation. Pushing an audio file over a crowded satellite connection in 2009 was an exercise in extreme patience.
Definitely.
Yet, despite a freshly bruised elbow and an internet connection choked by 1,000 iPhones, he refuses to miss a beat. He sits out on his cabin balcony and records what he dubs veranda casts.
Even with the wind.
Yeah, he is battling the incredibly loud, disruptive sound of the ocean wind whipping across the microphone, all just to maintain that unbroken chain of communication with his listeners.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it just speaks to a staggering work ethic. The podcast is not a hobby that can be paused for a vacation. It is an intrinsic part of his daily routine.
But the veranda casts eventually end. The ship returns to port, and the reality of the daily routine hits like a freight train.
The post-vacation glow evaporates the precise second he returns to his corporate day job.
Which is an environment he ominously refers to as the coal mine. This collision of vacation withdrawal and corporate stress results in a legendary vitriolic on-air rant.
The psychological whiplash is brutal.
It really is. The date is March 19th, officially the first day of spring, but his demeanor is entirely devoid of warmth.
Yeah, what happens at the office?
Well, he explains that a former coal miner, a colleague, missed a strict corporate deadline to submit some required information. And instead of taking responsibility, this individual complains directly to the president of the company about being excluded.
Oh, wow.
And Big Fatty does not employ a measured, polite corporate tone.
Not at all.
He aggressively replies to the email chain, explicitly calling the man an idiot for missing the deadline, and he purposefully CCs the president of the company right back onto the thread to ensure maximum visibility for his dressing down.
The anger he is projecting is so intense and palpable that his coworker, Mr. Vader, actually pulls him aside in the office and directly advises him to go home and take a double effing Zoloft.
The rage doesn't dissipate when he leaves the office either. He drags that fury straight to the microphone.
Oh, he does.
He pivots from his coworker to unleashing absolute vitriol toward Auntie Vera.
Right, the sea hag.
He is deeply insulted by the fact that she chose to pre-record her milestone 200th episode instead of broadcasting it live. Furthermore, he is incensed that he wasn't invited to participate in that milestone, especially given that he has graciously hosted her on his own show for multiple weeks in the past.
And just to round out the hostility, he launches into a passionate rant about how much he despises daylight savings time.
Yes.
Followed by expressing deep offense that nobody in his audience has left a comment honoring Broadway legend Cheetah Rivera.
I mean, think about the auditory experience for the audience. A few days prior, you're listening to the clinking of ice and a glass of export strength gin on a Caribbean balcony, and suddenly you are subjected to a screaming, profanity-laced meltdown over corporate email etiquette and daylight savings time.
It's incredible whiplash.
A modern influencer or creator would absolutely edit this out. They would recognize the meltdown, take a mental health day, and return when they could present a calm, curated facade. So why doesn't Big Fatty do that? Why broadcast the meltdown?
Because the meltdown is the core foundation of trust. In our current era of heavily sanitized social media, creators often hide the bad days to maintain an illusion of perpetual success.
Right, the highlight reel we talked about.
Exactly. Big Fatty actively rejects that model. By broadcasting the ugly, bitter, deeply uncomfortable reality of returning to a soul-crushing job after living a dream, he is validating the listener.
That's a great point. Everyone listening has experienced post-vacation depression.
Yeah, and everyone has wanted to send a fiery email to a coworker. By putting his unfiltered rage on public display, he makes the audience feel seen in their own frustrations.
And that authenticity allows him to seamlessly cool down and slide right back into the comforting routines of his community. The rage subsides, and he re-engages with the pop culture consumption that fuels the daily dialogue.
Oh yeah, the TV recaps.
He gives the audience his unique recaps of The Amazing Race, absolutely marveling at the bizarre spectacle of a deaf boy and his mother being forced to run around the freezing landscape of Siberia in their underpants. He also catches up on Make Me a Supermodel and the latest episodes of South Park.
And he actively revives the interactive communal feeling of the show that the vacation briefly interrupted.
Yeah, the Snooker cast.
Yes. He hosts a snooker cast, which is a fascinating format, where he essentially records the podcast while actively eating dinner.
Oh, that's right.
He is joined by Baby Jar, who is recovering from the tragedy of being bumped to coach class on his flight. They just sit around eating Greek chicken and potatoes, allowing the audience to just listen in on the ambient sounds and conversation of their meal.
The intimacy of broadcasting your dinner conversation to thousands of people is profound. And that intimacy directly leads to a major evolution for the show's format.
Ask Big Fatty.
Yes. A listener named Kim Beaver writes in and suggests a brand new segment. She calls it Ask Big Fatty, or ABF for short. The premise is simple. Listeners write in with their life problems, their dilemmas, or their questions, and Big Fatty provides his unfiltered advice.
And he absolutely loves the concept.
Totally. He correctly notes that literally no one else in the podsphere is utilizing an advice column format at this time. He even goes so far as to secure the official blessing of the Podfather to move forward with the idea.
And the audience immediately understands the assignment, providing incredible raw material. Like, a listener named Miss Kathy writes in to confess a hilariously unethical life hack.
Oh, I love this one.
She proudly admits to the audience that she saves over $500 a year at a grocery store by utilizing the self-checkout lane to ring up all of her expensive premium produce.
As bananas.
As bananas, yes.
It perfectly captures the moral universe of this community. It's slightly sneaky, unapologetically practical, and entirely focused on securing a discount by any means necessary.
So true. And by eagerly accepting this Ask Big Fatty segment, he undergoes a subtle but massive shift in his digital identity. He is no longer just a broadcaster recapping reality TV or venting about his commute. He is officially stepping into the role of an agony aunt. He becomes a trusted confidant, actively inviting his listeners to place their messy, complicated realities right alongside his own.
So what does this all mean? That transformation perfectly caps off an incredibly chaotic month. Looking back at March 2009, it becomes clear that this podcast isn't merely a show you consume. It is a living, breathing ecosystem sustained by this unbroken loop of shared dinners, technological struggles, workplace rage, and highly questionable grocery store tactics.
But as we analyze this ecosystem, I want to leave you with a thought that extends beyond 2009.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think about the physical archive Big Fatty is creating. We look back at the BFO and we see this incredibly raw, unvarnished connection between a host and his audience. Today, we possess infinitely more powerful tools to connect. We have fiber optic internet, instant video, and algorithms designed to find our exact niche.
Yeah, that's true.
Yet we rarely see this level of profound, messy intimacy anymore. It makes you wonder, in our rush to perfectly curate our digital lives, have we fundamentally lost the ability to actually connect with each other?
Wow.
Are we all just producing flawless towel puppets for an audience of strangers, terrified to show them the bruised elbows and the corporate meltdowns that make us human? By complaining about 2009 internet speeds, analyzing early reality TV, and capturing raw workplace anger, he isn't just making a daily check-in. He is accidentally creating an incredibly rich, unfiltered anthropological time capsule of late 2000s life.
That is a phenomenal question to ponder. The friction is what makes the connection real, and we've engineered the friction out of our digital lives. Thank you for taking this journey into the archives with us. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
We invite you to come back next Saturday for another month of Ruination, the early years.
And please remember to tune in each Sunday for Ruination Repeat, which recaps last week's current BFO episodes.
We'll see you.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, the early years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.